Killer Innovations Podcast for Sunday, May 1st, 2005, being brought to you from sunny Columbia, South Carolina.
Scene one, Apple, take one.
Hello, this is Phil McKinney, and welcome to the Killer Innovations Podcast. Based on feedback that I've received over the last couple of weeks, we're going to shorten this upfront chit-chat session and focus on getting into the core content. What I will do is I'll move what I would traditionally use as the introductory comments. We will move those to the end of the podcast. For those who want to listen to those, you can stay on at the end. But for those who are looking to get quickly into the meat of the content, we're going to shorten this upfront session so that we can literally get right into today's topics. As always, the opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers, or as I have said in previous podcasts, the traditional disclaimer. In today's, we're going to cover the normal three segments. So segment one is what I'm calling warm-up exercises. In last podcast, we were talking about different generation of tools, and my plan originally was to cover second generation tools in this podcast, but we actually have one listener who's sent me an email who's actually getting ready to run a Killer Innovations workshop based on the podcast for a nonprofit activity a group that he's involved in, and had asked for some suggestions on things that he should think about when running the workshop, and I talked about with him via email warm-up exercises. So I thought it would be good to take this podcast, talk about warm-up exercises. You know, how do you get teams ready to think creatively so that this listener in California could actually hear me describe this in detail in preparation for him running a Killer Innovations workshop. So hope everybody gets benefit out of this. Secondly, in segment two, we'll talk about weak signals. And what I'm talking about here is differentiation and really continuing on the theme of, best practices may not always be equal to the best strategy, and go into a little bit more detail on that. And then segment three will be the killer question of the week. So let's go ahead and get started talking about kind of the warm-up exercises for a Killer Innovations workshop. Part of the challenge with any workshop, any kind of brainstorming session that you're going to run, is when you get this group of people together, how do you warm them up? How do you get them at the peak performance before you actually start feeding them the key questions or the key target areas that you want them to generate ideas on? What I do in a Killer Innovations workshop is I will run them through a series of warm-up exercises. And this first part of the warm-up exercises is what I call changing perspective. And with this, the purpose of this part of the warm-up exercises really is to help them recognize that we all think with blinders on. For those of you who did not hear last week's podcast about changing perspective, I would encourage you to listen to that podcast. We'll give you a little bit more background. But again, the purpose in this section of the warm-up exercise or the warm-up portion of a workshop is really to help them recognize that we all think with blinders on. So in the case of the material that I hand out, I actually have a series of visual diagrams that prompt the user to try to pick out what do they see out of these diagrams. So these are diagrams you may have seen in puzzle books, those kinds of things. But really the objective here is that what you initially look at it, what you initially think you see, is not what's really there. And I find that kind of causes for people to recognize the fact that our minds will typically lock in based on our upbringing and the economic group that we hang out with, the types of friends and families and the schools we've gone to, force us all into a certain kind of thinking process. And then once I've got them and I've run through a couple of these fun exercises, and in fact, now that I think about it, what I'll do is I'll take this PowerPoint deck that I've used in the warm-up exercises, and I will post it on the Killer Innovations website. So you'll be able to download this. Actually, I'll load it up there as a PDF, since some people may not have a full set of PowerPoint to run it on their PowerPoint. So I'll stick it up there as a PDF, and that way people can download it and print it out and feel free to use it. Second section of the warm-up exercise is around sample questions. And what I do is I propose to give them a couple of questions just kind of as warm-up exercise. And first of all, I define the process. And the process, the way I set it up with the participants in the workshop is to clearly direct them to answer the questions posed. One, there's an idea quota. Every user is expected to generate 20 ideas slash answers to every question, and they'll have, 15 to 20 minutes with each question. The second item around making sure they answer the questions posed is don't assume the meaning of every word. For example, the word industry. How do you define industry? Is industry defined by geography? Is it defined by competitors? Is it defined by the customer segments you serve? So again, alerting them to the fact that not to get caught into the mental trap of assuming the meaning of every word in the question, meaning that while they're trying to generate the ideas, look at every word in the question and be able to understand or at least force them to recognize that they're going to come in with some kind of an assumption on what that word means, like I said, such as the word industry. And then encourage them to explore beyond the obvious to generate non-obvious ideas. So, the next thing I point out to the participants in the warm-up is, and this is kind of getting them coached to get ready to run the workshop, is caution them not to judge the ideas that are going to be thrown out by the participants in the workshop. And what I do here is actually on one slide, I'll show them the kind of words or the kind of thinking that it can be viewed as being judgmental. And judgmental doesn't really mean about the person presenting the idea. It could also be about the idea. It could be about the culture of the team in the room, etc. So let me run through some of these quote thought processes or judgment messages that could be applied and that people who are participating in the workshop should clearly avoid. Such things as, quote, "Let's shelve that for the time being." That's one of management's favorite terms. Great idea, let's shelve it, we'll come back to it in some future time. Next one is, "Who's going to do it?" This is the purpose of the workshop is not to get into trying to define the teams that are going to actually do it. Next one is, "I have something better." Probably do, put it on the table, but don't denigrate the previous idea, meaning that you have one better. It's that you have another idea to propose. We've tried that before. It won't fit in an operation. It's against all of our combined logic. Not enough return on investment. Oh, that's a favorite one of the CFOs. It's great, but someone must have already tried it. Oh, I thought of that a long time ago. We can't afford that. You'll never get approval. Oh, you're going down the wrong track. Don't rock the boat. The market is not ready yet. Hey, that's not a new concept. These are all terms that, albeit team members may not verbally bring up during a workshop, but mentally they may be thinking about it. And the key here is that if you put it on the table and you present a slide that shows this kind of thinking process and to say this is not to be accepted, It all of a sudden puts everybody on notice that they need to be thinking differently as you're going through this process. So, what are some of the sample questions that I propose? Well, actually, one of my favorite sample question that I propose, and it sounds like a pretty simple question, is what is the question is, what is half of 13? So think about it. If you're in your car, don't try this, but if you're listening to your iPod and you're sitting around and you got a scrap piece of paper, try to come up with 20 answers for the question, what is half of 13? And I'll just give you 5 seconds here to think about it for half of 13. So, I mean, we all come up with the obvious answer, right? Which is 6.5. Obvious answer. Challenge, however, is we all assume we understand the meaning of the words. What does the word half mean? Okay. I could denote that by taking a vertical line between the numbers 1 and 3. So that means I've split it in half. So rather than being 13, it's now two numbers of 1 and 3. It could be that the answer could be 6, half of 13 rounded. I could take the spelled out word of 13 and split it in half. How many different ways can you represent the word 13? So if I represent it in Roman numerals, X, III, then half of 13 is 11, XI, and number 2. Another way that I can split 13 when thinking about it as a Roman numeral is rather than vertical line, splitting it that direction, split it horizontally. Which then, if you split that, it becomes two Roman numeral eights, V, III. So there are a number of different ways you can think about answering it, but typically, when you ask this question of what is half of 13, people immediately jump to what they think is the one and only one correct answer, which is 6.5. So again, the purpose of asking this question is to really highlight to the participants in the workshop to change their thinking process such that they can open up their minds to be able to look for even the non-obvious answers. So what's the sample question two that I propose? And this is actually one of the killer questions that I've presented in the previous podcasts. And this question is what are some of the basic assumptions under which the industry operates? And the reason I propose this question during the warm-up session is to get them to think about, what are some of those basic assumptions? What if the opposite were true? And to open up their minds to try to avoid kind of the industry mental traps that we all get stuck into. So this is kind of the sample question. I typically use it with all workshops. But again, what are some of the basic assumptions under which the industry operates? And then my follow-up question is what if the opposite were true? So for every idea under the basic assumptions, then go through and say, what if the opposite were true? And again, the purpose on sample question two is simply to get them to be prepared to break some of those basic assumptions. And industry assumptions are kind of the ones that get us really stuck into this mental block. Again, minimum of 20 ideas in about a 15 to 20 minute session. Next, I present one slide on how do we explore beyond the obvious. Okay. And here what I do is I present the concept of scamper. Now, I've talked about scamper, and I don't remember whether it was show number two or show number three. But I talked about Scamper as kind of a tool to use to help drive ideas beyond the obvious. And so again, I'll just run through Scamper really quick. The S stands for substitute. So of your ideas that you're working on, what could you substitute something in that idea to come up with a different idea? Could I take two ideas and combine them? Could I take one idea and adapt it? Could I take another idea for the M and magnify it or minimize it? The P, could I put it to other uses? Could I take this idea and apply it to other uses? E, could I eliminate something? So could I take a piece of the idea and eliminate it, or a piece of the problem and eliminate it? Or R, could I reverse it or rearrange it? So S, C, A, M, P, E, R. Substitute, combine, adapt, magnify slash minimize, put to other uses, E, eliminate, R, reverse or rearrange. And I walked through Scamper because I found it to be a very quick tool. People understand it. And if they get stuck in a mental block while they're in the workshop, this is a little tool that they can use. And I actually print out the definitions and examples of the use of Scamper on a 5x7 index card that I give to everybody coming into a workshop. Next, I talk to them during the warm-up exercise about the evaluation process. So they know how the idea is going to be evaluated. So they understand what the objective at the end of the session. So I talked in one of the earlier podcasts about how do you get management support and how do you make people who are going to participate understand that this is just not a wasted exercise, but that there's going to be some absolute defined tangibles as a result, some actual deliverables that are going to be from the best ideas chosen. But the important process here is during the evaluation process, people are going to be very quick to kill ideas. So, on one of my slides that I present during the warm-up exercise, I make it quite clear, and here's the rule. Before anybody participating in a Killer Innovations workshop can kill an idea, any idea, even their own, they have to find at least three good reasons why it can be done. You know, we're really quick at pulling the gun out and killing off ideas. But this forces someone, before they, you know, if they try to kill an idea, they then have to come up with at least three good reasons why the idea can be done. Next, I kind of walk through the evaluation questions. And again, I've gone through that in a previous podcast, so I'm not going to go over that again. And then lastly, I point out kind of the rules to the road. So this is the last slide before we actually issue killer questions that the individual teams are going to begin working on. So basically, three rules of the road. First one is, please be sensitive to the other participants. Pretend you're talking to your Aunt Doris or your grandmother or your mother. Show everyone respect. Every idea is valuable. And the goal is to get as many ideas out as possible and to enjoy the process. Second is laugh with, but not at others. And this is an important one. Everyone's going to have fun, but we need to make sure that that doesn't fall into that sharp edge of ridicule. And my favorite line here is that only dim lights laugh at true brilliance. So if you're the person that's going to be laughing, odds are you're not the one generating the ideas. You're participating to the point of picking on or trying to ridicule other people's ideas. Third is reflect on how the ideas generated today relate to the overall objective. How do the choices you make today impact what the future may bring? So it isn't just come up with ideas, but understand, reflect on the ideas that you do generate today and how they align with the overall objective. Okay? And then the most important piece that I use just as we start the workshop activities is let's have fun. And I bring in, Etch-a-Sketches and Nerf balls and Play-Doh and Legos, which actually turn out to be one of the favorite toys used to kind of mock up in the room prototypes. And so we actually will use Play-Doh or modeling clay, Legos to actually build nearly real-time prototypes, proof of concepts, while you're in one of these killer innovation workshops. Okay? So that's basically what I run through during a warm-up exercise. So again, just quickly in summary, a series of visual puzzles on how to change their perspective, how to get people to recognize that they have mental blocks and that they need to be cognizant of it and force themselves to look beyond those mental blocks. Two, I'll present sample questions. First question I use is what is half of 13 and what are some of the basic assumptions under which the industry operates. And again, I run those as kind of a mini sample of how the workshop is going to work. So they get 15 to 20 minutes for each question and they have to generate 15 to 20 answers for each. And then I, during that process, I also walk them through how we're going to evaluate those ideas. And then I kind of go through the rules of the road. These are kind of the ground rules that apply to everybody while we're into the workshop. And then lastly, make sure that everybody understands that we're here to have fun. Okay, let's go on to segment two and weak signals. I'm going to pick up from last week's podcast and talk about differentiation. In the last podcast, I talked a little bit about some of the challenges of best practices not necessarily being the best strategy because the challenge of you applying kind of this normalized view of whoever the best are in a variety of industries, normalizing all of that, and therefore actually becoming more like your competition and not different from your competition. So I've done some research. I actually dug this out from some material that I'd used in the past around differentiation. And this, again, is just to kind of expand upon what was discussed last week. And what I mean by differentiation is really something that the market, customers, your competitors can clearly identify that puts you into a different category from where your peers would normally be bracketed into. And what are some of these rules for differentiation? Meaning that if you're really going to be different, what are some of these, what are some of the rules for the standpoint of you truly having something different? Number one, each differentiation must take a proposition to the customer. And it can't be just words, or it can't be that new ad campaign, and it can't be, the speeds and feeds on a product spec. Albeit that can be different, but it's really not differentiation. The differentiation must say to your customer, if you buy this product, you're going to get this specific differentiated benefit, whatever that benefit may be. But the differentiation is not in the minds of the market. It's in the minds of your customers. Not in the minds of your competitors, in the minds of your customers. Okay? The second rule of differentiation is that the proposition must be one that the competition can't or does not offer. If you're meeting the proposition of your competitors, that's parity. That's not differentiation. So how is it that what you're offering is something that your competitors cannot or they choose not to offer? And thirdly, and this is the most important one, the proposition must be so strong that it can move the market. If your differentiation is the fact that you deliver something in the color blue, that's not going to move the market. And therefore, I would argue that that's really not a differentiation. Okay? So what are some of the types of differentiation? What I mean by types of differentiation is these are different categories that you can apply. And this is where the weak signals come in. If you can pulse out there and get early signals from your customers around areas of interest or areas that are being applied in other industries that could possibly be applied to you. So differentiation doesn't mean that it absolutely has to be original. It has to be unique when combined in the offering that you're making to the customers. Okay? So this is where you apply weak signals potentially from other industries and other cultures and other geographies to create that uniqueness for your offering. So types of differentiation. One is owning an attribute. An attribute could be something that around a certain product. And again, it must be unique from the standpoint of around the product or service that you're trying to offer. Secondly, is owning a category. So it could be sales leadership, technology leadership, performance leadership, whatever that case might be. Third is it could be heritage. So it's kind of a substitute for leadership, but it could be the fact that you've been around for 200 years. And so therefore that is a differentiation because everybody else in your competitive marketplace may only been around for 25 years. Fourth is market specialty. And think about this as being the opposite position from being a generalist, basically all things to all people. If you're going to take the market specialty route for differentiation, then you have to stay specialized. You have to be very specific, very focused in that one specialty area and become the absolute best. Fifth is preference. So this is kind of a little tough one from the standpoint of differentiation because it's kind of a follow the herd kind of an activity. But basically, you can differentiate by slightly leading the herd. Fifth is production. This could be ingredients. It could be products or systems innovations to go around how you build your product, whatever the case might be. Next is be the latest. The challenge here is this is basically this challenge of making yourself obsolete. And lastly is what I would call hotness. So this is buzz, this is marketing, this is promotion. It could be by industry ratings. It could be sales, it could be fastest growth, whatever the case might be. And there is differentiation. You can do that, and there is a proposition. If you're delivering, if you're the fastest growing, then new customers see that as value because you're going to be around and you're growing faster than your competition, which means you're going to have more money to put into R&D, whatever the case might be. In these cases of types of differentiation, what I'm not saying though is that you only pick one. Here's a situation where you want to own one, two, three, or all of these. So you want to own the category. You want to have specialties. You want to have be the latest. You want to have buzz. You want to have the hot factor attached to what it is, whatever it is you're doing. Now, there are some challenges though, or pitfalls to this differentiation. One of those pitfalls is that you come up with some kind of uniqueness that's not valuable. You have it, the customer's not willing to recognize that as being truly unique and therefore attaches no value to it. Secondly, is there's too much differentiation. You've created such a large amount of differentiation that you've moved yourself out of the category and the customer can't recognize the value that you bring because of there's just so much differentiation. You're so far out of the category of how they would think about buying or solving a certain problem that too much differentiation could have a negative effect. Third is it's too big of a price premium. Yes, you can offer that differentiation, but that differentiation results in your product price being 20 times larger or higher than your closest competitor. Next is that you focus on the product instead of the value chain. When we talk about differentiation, we tend to focus heavily on product features or attributes. And so therefore, with these product features, we sometimes get so focused on that and don't focus on differentiation in the value chain. And then lastly is we tend to fail to recognize the buying segments. That meaning that we focus on a differentiation that doesn't address really the needs of the buying segments who buy your products or services. So this is somewhat a little bit to like the uniqueness that is not valuable, but in this case you may find something unique in one segment, but that may be a fairly small segment or an insignificant segment. And how do you really focus on differentiation across a wide range of segments? So next I want to talk a little bit about differentiation from the standpoint of kind of what happens if we kind of get stuck in this Me Too society, meaning we don't differentiate and we tend to all herd around, you know, the hot and upcoming market areas. And what do I mean by Me Too activities? So let me talk through kind of some examples of Me Too industries. And I'm going to do a comparison of what these industries look like in the 1970s, in the late 70s, and what do they look like in the late 90s. So basically a 20-year difference. So let's talk about bottled water. In the late 70s, there were basically 16 brands of bottled water. In the late 90s, there's more than 50. In the late 70s, there were 4 different milk types. In the late 90s, more than 20. In the late 70s, magazine titles totaled about 340 on the newsstand. In the late 90s, we're talking more than 800 magazine titles. Here's our favorite in the podcasting world, radio stations. Late 70s, there were over 7,000 radio stations. Today, or I should say not today, but in the late 90s, there was over 12,500 radio stations. And then what about book titles? In the book title arena, 40,000 titles were published in the late 70s. And this is that it was on a per year basis. In the late 90s, there was over 77,000 book titles published in the late 90s. So again, hot industries, very hard to differentiate. You know, look in the book title space. I don't know about you. I spent a lot of time at Borders and Barnes & Noble and all the bookstores. Lots of books being published. Small handful that really fit what I'm looking for. So out of all the 77,000, you know, book titles getting published on an annual basis, you know, the ones aimed at that I'm going to be interested in is relatively small. But a lot of Me Too kind of activities. One of the other areas that we kind of get stuck in this differentiation challenge, though, is what we call brand extension. This is kind of a Me Too activity, but it's kind of a Me Too activity within a company. So again, I'm going to compare against the late 70s to the late 90s on a variety of different companies. So let's take McDonald's, and these are menu items. In the case of McDonald's in the late 70s, the total menu at a McDonald's restaurant consisted of about 13 items. In the late 90s, that's now 43 items. Levi jeans, 41 different styles of jeans in the late 70s. We now have over 70 styles in Levi jeans. Frito-Lay chips. In the late 70s, they had 10 different offerings on the shelf in the grocery store. In the late 90s, almost 80. 80 different Frito-Lay chip varieties. Pop-Tarts. Late 70s, 3. Late 90s, 30. 30 different types of Pop-Tarts. In the late 70s, Kentucky Fried Chicken menu items, 7. I don't know how many different types of chicken you can have, but but in the late 90s, 14. And so with this challenge of this differentiation is that you run into these issues of how do you really differentiate? What's the real value? How do I use or can I use weak signals? So can I go look at other parallel industries that are out there? And how can I apply them to what it is I'm trying to do in my segment? And can I use those as unique differentiation? And just and then hopefully in this last portion I was trying to show is some just some of the pitfalls that you run into with differentiation, and to give you some examples, both by industry and by specific companies, where through the lack of innovation, and not all of it's 100% innovation, but the fact is that using brand extension as a way to drive market rather than truly driving, that innovation, driving that differentiation that creates those new market opportunities. And with that, let's move on to segment number three, the killer question. So this week's killer question is, what activity done in conjunction with my product could be combined? So think about it. What product or slash could be a service that you're offering to the marketplace, when done in conjunction with it, could be combined? And the question here is really to drive the thinking around the entire value chain that you're delivering to your customer. So rather than just thinking about your individual product, think about your product in relation to the value chain that the customer is buying from. Could you go off and combine those into the entire value chain, deliver that to your customer, and therefore get some kind of a premium, or in this case, differentiation in the minds of your customer? So one obvious example that it's occurring in the computer industry is if I'm providing as a software vendor, software into the computer industry, could I offer an additional portion of that value chain around that software, such as professional services, consultants that can come in and manage and deliver that software to ensure that it's going to operate properly? A non-technical example would be the situation where I'm going out and I'm buying a car, and there's other things that I'm going to have to do as a result of buying that car that is part of an extended value chain that somebody could potentially bundle up and offer to me. So if I go buy the car, buy the insurance, get the license plates, and in where I live, I have to have a county sticker on the windshield, get the sticker, all of that, get the emissions testing, pollution tests, all of that wrapped around. So literally, I just go one place, buy the car, get the car, and everything is magically taken care of. You can think of the same thing with home buying. If I'm buying a new home, I want to buy the home, I need homeowners insurance, I need moving services, I need house cleaning service to clean the house or paint the house prior to me moving in. I'm moving into a new area. I don't know handyman. I don't know who the painters are. I don't know plumbers. Bundle all that up as an offering so that when I move into a new area, my house has been cleaned before I arrive. I already have a handyman who's been out to the house, who's fixed any of the minor things, and I have his phone number. So usually within the first 2 weeks of moving into a new house, something breaks and you don't know who to call. So those are just some examples. But again, let's remember the question: what activity done in conjunction with my product could be combined? A very powerful question. And so with that, we're going to wrap up the podcast for this week. So again, thank you for listening. If you'd like information on the topics discussed, including the download of the PDF document containing the slides for the warm-up session, then visit the killerinnovations.com website. If you had feedback or comments, please send an email to podcast@killerinnovations.com, or you can phone the feedback line at 703-636-4460, or you can always Skype me at phil_mckinney. And just as a reminder, we now are in a new month of May, so Podcast Alley, which is the main site for you to voice your opinions on podcasts, to vote for your favorite podcasts, restarts the vote counts at the first of every month. So if you find this podcast useful and helpful, I would ask for you to please vote. You can go directly to Podcast Alley, or I've added a form on the killerinnovations.com website to make it much easier for you to vote. Just go there, put your email address in, click the vote button. Podcast Alley will send you a confirmation email. You must click on the URL that they send you to have your vote count as part of an email validation. You're allowed to vote once per month per podcast. So you can vote one for me and one for other podcasts that you may listen to. So last month, we actually had a good set of votes out there. We actually ended up in the top 100 out of the 4,000 podcasts that are out there. And again, I thank you as listeners. And again, I would ask that if you find this useful, go out to Podcast Alley, post your comments, find, you know, let others hear of this and other podcasts that you find useful to encourage the investment of time and energy that all the podcasters put into creating their shows. So again, I thank you for the votes last month, and would ask that you go out and vote again for the month of May. The other thing that I'm going to do a little bit differently here at the end of the show is I'm going to be adding on and playing some podcast promos here at the end. So following the music, normally when you hear the music at the end, that would be the end of the show. Following the music, you're going to hear a couple of podcast promos of other podcasts that are out there. And these promos that I'm playing today are for sites that have been supporting the Killer Innovations podcast. And this is, they've been supporting my activities either by mentioning the podcast on their shows, or have played the Killer Innovations podcast promo itself on their shows. So again, these are other podcasts that have found Killer Innovations helpful to themselves and have promoted it on their own podcast. So I felt compelled to support them likewise. So again, I'll be playing these after the music. And with that, we're going to wrap up. Thank you very much for your time. Please send me feedback. I've been communicating with a number of you by email and by Skype. Don't hesitate to reach out to me. Love to hear feedback and suggestions. And actually, in the next podcast, next week, I'll share with you some of the ideas that some of the listeners are proposing that we're going to be looking to implement here over the next month or so. With that, I thank you very much for listening, and have a great week.
Are you suffering from annoying iPod pain and itching? Well, relief, my friend, is on the way. Tune in your browser now to truckerphoto.blogspot.com for soothing, immediate iPod pain relief. Avoid that embarrassing doctor visit and make that expensive iPodectomy unnecessary now by tuning in to Trucker Tom's podcast. A twice-weekly application of Trucker Tom will immediately melt away that embarrassing pain and itching in your iPod. Again, that's truckerphoto.blogspot.com. You better do it now before it gets out of control.
Hiya, Chad.
Hey, Tim, what's up?
We need to cut a promo, man.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, what do you want to say in the promo?
I'm going to say that folks should tune into us at mymac.com.
So we want to push the mymac.com part of our promo.
Oh, absolutely.
Otherwise, they're probably not going to find us.
That's right.
What do we do in our podcast that we should tell them about?
We talk about Mac stuff.
Well, not just Mac. We talk about Apple and Steve Jobs and...
You know, and anything else.
Anything else. I mean, you know, sometimes we do really stupid stuff, too.
Absolutely.
Hey, we should probably mention that we give stuff away. We have a lot of contests.
Yes, we do.
We actually have a sponsor, so we can afford to give stuff away.
Thanks to our sponsors.
Hey, so anybody who wants to listen to some cool podcast stuff, check us out at...
MyMac.com.
That's MyMac.com.